Welcome to the Amazon Web Services Podcast, hosted by Simon Alicia and Simone Brunozzi. This is your regular insight into the world of AWS with service updates, architecture discussions, and technical tips. You can contact us on our website, aws.amazon.com/podcast, by email at awspodcast@amazon.com, and on Twitter at @AWSPodcast. Thank you and welcome to the AWS podcast. This is podcast episode number 3. My name is Simon Alicia and I'm Principal Solution Architect for Amazon Web Services in Australia. And joining me as ever is Simone Brunozzi. Good morning, Simone.
Yes, good morning to everybody. And I'm here in Singapore today and I'm actually moving very soon to San Francisco. And I will be the new technology evangelist for the San Francisco and the Bay Area. So I'm pretty excited for the move.
What a great opportunity and really exciting, and yet another country to add to your list there, Simone. Well done.
Yes, thank you very much. So what are we going to talk about today, Simon?
We've got a bunch of exciting stuff to talk about today. And the first one I want to talk about is EC2, or Elastic Compute Cloud, status checks. This is a relatively new capability that many people might not be aware of. But before we do that, maybe we should just touch on some of the classic challenges of monitoring the health of your virtual machines in a traditional IT environment.
Yes, so I think that most of the time when the customers are trying to understand the status of their EC2 instance, usually it's very difficult to really get to know what's going on. Sometimes they wonder if it's their software that is hanging the machine up, or if it's an issue related to the EC2 instance itself. So up until recently, some of our customers were commenting saying that it was very difficult for them to understand what was the status of their machines and therefore to take action. But then, of course, we listen to customer feedback as much as possible. And very recently, we introduced a new feature called EC2 Status Check. Can you describe it, Simon?
Yeah, for sure. So status checks help customers find and fix issues that may impair their instances from running applications. So EC2 performs automated tests to detect issues with underlying AWS systems and within individual instances. And so now customers can see the test results as passed or failed status checks. And this is now part of the Instance Status API. So along with scheduled events, which will tell you information about planned reboots or retirements, you can also now use these system status checks to understand what's going on. So, for example, if you lose power or network connectivity, they're detected by the system status checks. And then the instance status checks determine problems like a bad file system, exhausted memory, incompatible kernel, etc. So you can understand whether the problem was with, if you like, the underlying hardware or with the virtual machine itself.
Yes, that's very nice. And it's also very important to remark that this is all automatic. The customer doesn't need to do anything to enable those things because those things are enabled by default for all EC2 instances that are being launched by our customers. So as an example, if you open the management console and you take a look at your EC2 instances currently running, you will also be able to see the status checks of those machines. And of course, that will help you determine if there is any hardware problem, which could be, as you mentioned, networking or power or other issues, or rather, a software problem. Could be the kernel, could be other things. And of course, the customer then can take action very easily. And of course, if you want to also use this feature with your command line interface, you have to remember to update it to the latest version, which includes those new API calls.
Exactly, they're brand new API calls. So a lot of customers are using them for automated scripts or just running regular checks as kind of part of their audit procedure. So that was a good coverage of status checks, a little capability, but a really interesting one, I think, for a lot of customers. But something that's maybe a little bit more broad in terms of use is something called Simple Notification Service, or SNS. Simone, tell us all about SNS.
Yes, of course. So the Simple Notification Service is a service that is used to push notifications that are driven by events using HTTP, HTTPS, email, JSON, or SMS and SQS. Essentially, you can create topics that are then subscribed by users or systems, and then messages are published to the topic and immediately sent to subscribed endpoints. And of course, the benefit is that it's very simple to set up those delivery policies and message formats, and there is zero management, and of course, it's highly scalable. So it's very easy for customers to create those notifications and then take advantage of those things.
Yeah, it's kind of a nice way to tie things together. And as ever, as you mentioned before, Simona, we're always trying to listen to what customers want. And because we support different protocols and methods of delivering those SNS notifications, often they lend themselves to different formats. So obviously, if you're notifying someone via an SMS message, you want a really compact, small format. Whereas if you're using maybe JSON to an application, you can be a little bit more luxurious with the amount of information you're sharing. So we recently announced the ability to configure delivery policies in terms of the rate that you send messages, but also configurable message formats. So you can choose what sort of content should go out of each particular format, which is kind of interesting, don't you think, Simona?
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. And also you can define a retry policy and a throttle policy. So, for example, if you want to avoid, let's say, flooding one particular endpoint with too many messages, you can set up a policy that would essentially limit the amount of messages that you will send to that specific endpoint. So there will be no disruption in the other services that you're using. And also the configurable message formats give you also this ability that you mentioned, and it's very important for customers. I've actually met a few customers that were so happy to be able to customize the type of message based on the specific type of endpoint or the specific type of protocol that they were using. It's something really amazing and also very easy to configure. In the past, if you wanted to do this by yourself, it would have taken hours and hours of setting up machines and picking software and paying for software, etc. SNS instead is super easy. Customers love it.
Yeah, it's a great thing. And for those customers who haven't maybe directly played with SNS or wondering how to start with it, one really easy way is to use CloudWatch. So within CloudWatch, we can set alarms and we can notify people or emails of particular activities that have taken place. And SNS is actually the mechanism by which we deliver those messages, which is kind of a neat way to have a bit of a try and a bit of a play without having to build anything particularly substantial.
Yes, very nice. So I think that's enough for SNS, and we suggest our customers to try it out if they didn't do it yet. And I think it's now time to talk about our black belt tip, right, Simon?
Absolutely.
What's the tip for today?
Well, we've got a double barrel black belt tip, if you can have such a thing. And it's around one of our oldest services, S3, the Simple Storage Service. And what many customers may not know is that when we release our services, we're always iterating and always trying to improve them based on customer feedback. So there are two black belt tips we'll be sharing today. One is called object expiration, and the second one is multi-object delete. So both of them are really focused on deleting content rather than storing content. So object expiration allows customers to define rules and schedule the deletion of the object after a predefined time period. So this could be used for things like managing logs, backups, or other storage that you maintain for a defined period of time. So these are things you want to keep, but then you want to get rid of. And you can set these different rules by things like prefixes, so an initial part of the key name. So it may be like log slash and then everything after that. It could be a status of the rule, so whether it's working or not working. The expiration time, so what the time period we want to manage for those particular objects. And basically, it's the number of days from the object's creation day. So you can imagine creating a rule for your logs that you want to keep logs for 30 days. As soon as it hits the 31-day point, you'd like them to be deleted. This means that you're optimizing how much you're storing in S3 in a really manageable way and keeping generations of data very effectively managed, which I think is really exciting because customers want to pay for what they use, but they only want to pay for what they're actually using. And often it's easy to get large collections of data over a long period of time that isn't trimmed up.
Yes, very good. And it's also very important that, for example, with the other feature that we're going to talk about, the multiple object delete, those two things in combination together, they could be very powerful. So the multiple object delete or multi-object delete is a capability that allows you to delete up to 1,000 objects with a single API call. So as you know, customers are storing sometimes billions of objects on Amazon S3. So when they need to delete objects directly of course, they need to do it with a single API call per object. That's why we introduced the multi-object delete, which allows them to essentially do batch deletion of files immediately without the need to use too many API calls. Because the problem with API calls is that if you do a lot of them, of course, you will have a lot of overhead and a lot of bandwidth requirement to do all of those API calls and requests to Amazon S3. And of course, customers can now use a combination of those two things. One could be, you know, doing multiple objects deletion when they have, you know, custom need to delete specific files, and they can do it in thousands, not one by one. And of course, they can also, on the other hand, use the object expiration to essentially plan for deletion for those files, such as backups that need to be retained only for a specific amount of time. They don't need to go back to those files again and remember to delete those files. They can just set up the object expiration and then let S3 do the work. So those two things together actually make it very, very simple for customers to handle even billions of objects or files on Amazon S3.
It is really easy, as you say, Simone. And the nice thing is, particularly on the object expiration, you can actually set up those rules within the console as well as through the API. So those rules are evaluated once per day. And as soon as an object is tagged for deletion, you're no longer billed for it. Now, the actual deletion of the object may take place a little bit later. It just depends on where in the process it is. But the nice thing is that as soon as your rule has tripped to say, hey, I no longer need this object, you're not paying for it anymore, which is pretty cool, I think, in terms of managing your spend.
Yes, very nice. And that's something that customers really like about us, the fact that we don't want to bill them for things that they don't need. They love our approach to these things.
Exactly. It makes life easier. And the thing I like about the multi-object delete is that we can legitimately say that that API call is 1,000 times better than the single object delete.
Yes. Very, very well done.
Very nice. So I think we've reached the end again of yet another podcast. And again, as always, great to speak with you, Simona, and of course the users. And of course, any customers can reach out to us whenever they want with suggestions. They can give us feedback over Twitter and at our microsite as well.
Yes, thank you very much for listening, and talk to you soon. Goodbye.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening to the AWS podcast. We love to get your feedback, so please contact us via our website, aws.amazon.com/podcast, via email at awspodcast@amazon.com, and on Twitter at @AWSpodcast. Background music provided under Creative Commons Attribution 2.5 by Porchcat. Visit ccmixter.org/files/porchcat/3705.